Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Jake, what are you doing, man? Come on. Clock says 3:30. There we go. There we go.
Hello, everyone. I am Kimberly Adams, and welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
I'm Kyle Rosendahl. Thank you for joining us on this What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. Your questions, our answers from the past week or longer ago, frankly, if we dig them out of the mailbag. If you've got one that you think we ought to answer, by the way, a question that is, leave us a voicemail, 508-827-6278, or you can send us an email, makemesmart@marketplace.org. We will answer any question that comes, no matter how it gets to us. We're easy that way.
Speak for yourself. Let's get going the first question.
Yes.
Hi, this is Claudia in Nicholas, California. So inflation is increasing, reducing consumers' ability to purchase goods and certainly gasoline and heating oil.
Yes.
Or at least the paycheck doesn't go as far.
Also, right. Yes.
And then the Fed is going to increase interest rates, which will make money more expensive to borrow, as a way to dampen increasing inflation. I don't get it. Can you make me smart?
Totally fair.
Okay.
Totally fair.
So,
okay.
Totally fair question. So here's the deal. Inflation is, very broadly speaking, too much money chasing too few goods, which is what we have in this economy now, right? There's a whole lot of money because people saved during the pandemic. There's a whole lot of money because of government stimulus plans. There's a whole lot of money because interest rates have been at zero or were at zero until the other day for a very long time. And there are too few goods because of the supply chain backlogs that are well documented because of the pandemic and the way it messed with this economy. So what the Federal Reserve typically does during a recession is increases the price of money. I really like the way Claudia said that, right? Raising interest rates is making money more expensive, so it becomes more expensive to borrow, thus dampening demand, right? If companies and people can't borrow as much money to spend what they want, there is less demand for those goods, and thus it sort of reaches some equilibrium. The challenge, of course, is whether or not the Federal Reserve can do that without a hard landing, without driving the economy into a recession. And that's the big thing that everybody's watching now, is whether they can do it with a soft landing, right? Raising interest rates to dampen demand just enough so that we do not go into a recession, but inflation eases. However, this is not a normal recession, okay? Jay Powell cannot raise interest rates tomorrow and all of a sudden make the supply chain problems go away. He can't make more semiconductors happen. He can't make more cars show up. He can't make the backlog in the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach go away. He can't do that. So he's a little bit stuck. That said, the challenge is that the Fed really only has extremely blunt tools with which to manage this economy. So Powell and the rest of them are hoping that by decreasing demand a little bit, by increasing the cost of money, they're going to help alleviate somewhat those supply chain problems, and thus inflation. I should tell you that even the Federal Reserve does not believe it's going to be able to get interest rates below, I think it's 4.2% by the end of the year. So the Fed
inflation.
Inflation, thank you very much. Inflation, absolutely. Even the Federal Reserve does not believe it can get inflation below 4.2% by the end of the year. So it's going to raise interest rates throughout this calendar year in the hopes of controlling demand, but it's a little bit tricky this time around. Trickier than most. Thank you for the correction.
Yes, what Kai said.
That's what I got. Yes. Okay. No, that was a really good question, right? Because it's not, Jay Powell can't make all this stuff happen, you know, snapping his fingers. Anyway.
Well, I was just going to say, it's also not super intuitive, this idea that you raise one thing to stop raising prices. Like, it's confusing.
The whole idea that what they're trying to do is slow the, they want to hurt the economy, right? In the baldest sense, is a little bit counterintuitive. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, on to the next question. Brian has been paying attention to NFTs, non-fungible tokens. We're going to get into that in the answer, I hope. And the idea that you can have proof of ownership of a piece of digital art. So here's what he wrote. I'm wondering, Brian says, whether a more practical use in the future might be for verifying the authenticity of a photograph or a video clip, especially as doctored images or deep fakes are likely to grow in number and sophistication. Ms. Adams, over to you.
Potentially is the short answer, and here comes the longer one. First of all, as like good background reading on this, our colleague Janet Wynn did a really nice explainer on this. It's going to be in the show notes, and it gets into blockchain, NFT, and crypto, and all sorts of things. Really useful. So NFTs, non-fungible tokens, as was mentioned earlier, is this idea that it's a digital asset on the blockchain. Specifically, it's sort of like a certificate that points to a particular digital asset and says, that thing over there, that's mine. And here's my piece of paper that proves it. Now, I had a very interesting conversation over on tech with someone when Nike and who else? Nike and a bunch of like high-end luxury brands were trying to sue people who made NFTs of their items. And it's like, you can't really sue them for copyright infringement. At least we don't think they can yet, because they're not copying your product. They're just pointing to an image of the product. And so they're not duplicating your product. And so there's like new case law that's literally being developed at this very, very time. And the guest gave an amazing explanation of NFTs that I have found really helpful. Remember back in the 90s when you could name a star? And it was like, name a star after your loved one. And that'll be their special star. And you paid some money. And effectively, somebody wrote your name down on a book and said, this star is associated with this name. Here's a certificate to prove it. But at the same time, it's not like you had the star, not like you can do anything with the star, and nothing really stopping other people from making their own list of people who own stars. So NFTs are a thing. Okay, but to the specific question about whether or not it might be good for verifying the authenticities of photographs or videos, possibly. So the team got in touch with Dr. Hani Farid, an electrical engineering and computer science professor at the University of California, Berkeley. And he said there are camera apps that can capture lots of data for an image or a video, like the time, the date, geolocation, recorded pixels, all this stuff that gives you a really clear imprint that this is a real image that was taken at this time. And then those apps can take a digital signature from the data, cryptographically sign it, and then put it on the blockchain. So wherever that image goes on the internet, you can follow that blockchain back to the original and compare it to what you're seeing to see it's real. Now, I should mention the doctor is a paid advisor to an app that does this, which is called TruePic. And it could happen. And this could be useful and it could be quite secure. But two downsides. Number one, you have to take the image with that kind of specialized app, which isn't in very wide use now. Another downside is that blockchain may not scale well enough for all of the images and all of the videos in the world every day. So, but at the same time, people who watch this space, disinformation, and also women's rights groups, because deepfakes and doctored videos can really be used in revenge porn and really toxic and dangerous ways. They are hopeful that blockchain might address some of these things. Yes. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think,
maybe.
You know, it's so interesting. It's such newish technology. It's, you know, it's clearly the way of the wave of the future, this and Web3 and the blockchain and all that jazz. We don't all understand it well enough yet. You know, I think that's the problem, certainly for me.
Well, and the problem layered on top of that problem is a lot of people who also don't understand it are spending money on it or investing
so
in
much,
it.
Like real money. Yeah, for sure. Yes, absolutely.
And so, yes. You know, just be careful out there, folks. Like if you don't understand a product, might not be the best thing to dump your hard-earned cash into.
Yep.
So, all right. Here is a listener with a slightly different question about those interest rate hikes.
Hi, Kai and Kimberly. Okay. This is Clint from Austin. And I'm curious, after the rates were boosted by a quarter of a point this past week, I noticed the stock market actually went up and ended on a pretty good positive note. I guess I was expecting that the rate hike was going to cause the economy or the stock market to slow down or go down. I'm curious why it went up. Thanks for making me smart.
So, a couple of things. Number one, stock market is not the economy. Let's all remember that. Repeat after me. Stock market is not the economy, just for the record. But here's the deal on what happened last Wednesday. First of all, I'm going to give the specific answer and then a general answer. Mm-hmm. In the moment, when Jay Powell came out, and he was really hawkish, which is to say he gave off the vibe of we're going to raise interest rates until we get this damn thing under control. In that moment, stocks actually dropped, right? Traders mm-hmm. and investors went, oh, my God, it's terrible. They're raising rates. And then they sat back and thought about it for a minute and stocks finished the day up. So there's that. But look, a couple of things. Number one. Everybody and their grandmother knew that Jay Powell was going to raise interest rates that day. That was not a surprise. Mm-hmm. So the market had priced in the increase in the cost of money, number one, right? They knew it was coming, no big deal. Number two, inflation is really bad for this economy right now. And traders and companies understand that getting it under control is the most important job Jay Powell has. And if he and the Fed decide they're going to raise interest rates to do it, you go, Jay. We're with you. That's number two. And number three, I would really encourage people to discount the day-to-day volatility in the stock market, especially right now with the war on and all of the uncertainty that that has brought. Day-to-day movements, honestly, check them and then move on if you want to. Or listen, you know, to Marketplace and hear what kind of music it is and then don't listen to the rest of it. Well, listen to the rest of it, but you know what I mean. Just keep an eye on the trend, keep an eye on bigger picture, but day-to-day movements in individual stocks or individual indices, they're not your friend right now because the volatility is just out of control. So there you go.
I just want to add a quick caveat on the inflation is really bad for this economy right now, except that part of the inflation that we're seeing is due to wage growth, especially in a lot of service sector and jobs that were typically low income. Mm-hmm. And so those people making more money is also contributing to prices going up. So not all of it is universally bad. So,
Fair.
Let's do this last question.
Next one?
Real quick.
Next one. Let's hit it.
Hi, this is Adam from Hermosa Beach. My question is, who owns the data? When you talk about autonomous vehicles such as Tesla and now that the tractor world, the ag sector is getting into it. Who owns that data? Is it the GPS companies? Is it the tractor manufacturers? Is it the individuals and the equipment? Anyway, thanks for making me smart.
It is still being decided is the answer. It's a question. Automakers have added so much additional tech to their cars that can track behavior, how you're driving, what you're listening to, etc. There's a bunch of apps in there. And for the most part, at least according to a review of a lot of these laws in the Harvard Journal of Law and Technology from back in 2018, so a little bit ago, it's mostly that data belongs to the car companies. And there are several states that are trying to push legislation to give consumers more control of that data, but it is a work in progress. On the tractor question specifically, the team wrote to John Deere, the tractor makers, with that question. And here's what they said. Farmers have control over their data. We will only use that information to enhance machine performance and quality. We believe that the insights and information will be a key part of meeting our industry's collective goal to produce enough food and build the infrastructure required to sustain growing world population. And that the farmers control their data and who they share it with and when. Control is different than own.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
point made.
Yeah.
All right.
Lots of data and you know, all it's mobile and all that jazz. Anyway, all right. So real quick, two things on the way out of here. Number one, you'll notice we have not asked you for money. And you know why? Because you already did it. You already did it. We had a goal of $100,000. You hit $102,000. And I just, I want to say thanks because the kind of journalism that we do, it ain't cheap. And it's not just me and Kimberly. It's the whole team that helps put this podcast and all the other Marketplace podcasts on the air and the broadcast shows and the digital work and all of that stuff. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. We really appreciate it. Make Me Smart and all of the rest of them. Marketplace.org/givesmart, by the way, if you're still in the mood. All right. That's it.
Yes. Thank you for real. And to celebrate, a little announcement. We are going to do something extra special for this week's Friday episode of Economics on Tap. Kai's laughing. This is purely for me. We're going to have a cherry blossom party. Well, I hope you enjoy it too, cackle. Kai.
Well, there's a box of stuff inside the house that Bridget sent me that I have to go open to see what she's mailed me. I don't even know.
Yes, which is a hint that if you don't usually join us for the live stream, you might want to this time. There will be thematic things, shall we say. So we're going to have a good time. So if you can watch and you're able to, it'll be great.
You should. And it's all about, as Kimberly said, it's for her. It's because she hasn't been able to have her cherry blossom party for the past 2 years. That's why. Right?
You know, after our talk about that the other day, I gave it a real hard think.
And?
I'm going to go ahead and do it.
You should.
I sent out the invites last night. So it should be fun. And folks, as you're preparing for Economics on Tap, go for the theme. Come up with a cool cherry blossom themed drink. I'll get things going. One of my favorite mocktails that I do around cherry blossom time, pomegranate juice, ginger beer, maybe with like a little sprig of mint. And if you want to, you can always throw in a dash of bitters. And it's pink.
I'm going to be drinking beer. All right, we're done. We're going. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow. News and some Make Me Smile. Send us your questions for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. You can email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org, or leave us a voicemail, 508-UB-SMART. And that's the show for this Wednesday. Boom.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera and Marque Green with production help from our intern, Tiffany Bowie.
Jake Cherry was in charge today down at the studios in L.A. Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Bridget Bodner. I will tell you that she told me there is another box of cherry blossom stuff coming tomorrow, so I don't even know what's going on. She's also slacking me now and saying you have to find a cherry blossom beer. No, I don't.
Come on, be festive.
Have you met me?
Yes, be festive. Step outside of your box.
Oh, good grief.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.